actions, demonstrations in Brooklyn. There was a bit of looting in Jamaica, but nothing major.
Yeah.
And no violence to speak of, although there was some violence, unfortunately.
Interesting. Lister had been in the same area, in the Times Square area. And if you look a couple of pages in at the demonstration in Times Square, take a look at that. There's those of you who have copies of today's New York Times can join in. Of a group of people on an island in the middle of Times Square near the Armed Forces recruiting station. Okay. The area surrounding that, the streets surrounding that, was filled with people. That the rest of that picture was cropped out. Why? I don't know. To de-emphasize the size of the crowd or whatever. But that was cropped out.
Where did you see this?
This is, I believe, a few pages in. Coverage of the Times Square protests.
This is in the New York Times.
This is in the New York Times today.
All right, I am looking at the New York Times.
Okay. Well, you got to go further back a little bit.
Further back, you mean further into the paper? Or
let's see.
I see. Wherever they're continuing the story. George Bush's
there it is. There it is. It's at the top of page 10.
Crowd of people. Okay, crowd of people standing on the island by the U.S. Armed Forces recruiting. And now what did you say was cut out of this picture?
The left side and bottom, which were filled with, which had crowds surrounding it.
I see. So there's actually a lot more people.
Yeah. And the other thing that Lister told me is that about the time of the when the news broadcasts come on, they were trying to watch it on the big TV screen up in the middle of Times Square, and they had shut that off on purpose.
Really? Now, that's interesting. Yeah.
Yeah.
The police also were calling offices and advising them to let people leave early because they were expecting trouble. And as I said before, every business in Lower Manhattan seems to be closed at 11 o'clock, including a lot of 24-hour places. St. Mark's Pizza closed. I've never seen that happen before, and it did. So the city was an interesting place to be, very different. Now, a lot of cities are having problems of various sorts. Las Vegas, troops moved into Las Vegas. And it's weird to be reading about this, to be seeing that U.S. Army, Marines are moving into American cities. Now, I'm not quite sure why it's happening this way. Obviously, the police are inundated, and when that happens, they call in the National Guard. But apparently, even the National Guard isn't enough. Now, they're calling in the real Army and the real Marines. It's a scary situation. And it makes me think, you know, there's this very, very thin border between normal society and complete chaos. And we like to think that here in America, everything is normal, and you know, we live our lives in freedom and prosperity. But it just takes something like this, you know, a riot, some fires, and anarchy breaks out, and all of a sudden there's no control. You have 2-hour lines at supermarkets. You have no gasoline. You have rationing. You have fear in the streets, just like any place else in the world. It's you know, it can happen so quickly, and look what's happening around us. Las Vegas, Seattle, Atlanta, San Francisco, Miami. All of those places there are riots going on, not right now, hopefully, but they have been affected and people are afraid.
We also have someone coming up in about a few minutes who was there, was very much involved in a lot of the protest action going on yesterday in Manhattan, and we're going to dial him up right now. His name is Dred Scott, and Lister introduced me to him earlier today. And he should be waiting, and we'll see what he has to say. What he told me earlier was that he was able to assemble high school students, you know, take them right out of school, and bring them out over the Brooklyn Bridge. He brought them in from Brooklyn, walking over the Brooklyn Bridge. That's probably the throng that you came to, the throng from downtown that you were talking about, Tompkins Square area, probably came from Brooklyn. And they joined in. The thing that was very interesting is that a lot of the faculty members, the administrations of those high schools that he went to, were willing to let the kids out.
Mm-hmm.
And some even joined.
That's a wise decision to make. It's, you know, a lot of this I've heard many times, and I agree with this wholeheartedly. A lot of the aftermath of this will be decided by the white reaction and, of course, the ruling reaction by administration of schools and local government and, of course, national government, although we haven't seen too much of a reaction from them in a positive way, I don't think. And that reaction is what is going to decide whether or not this ends peacefully or gets more and more factionalized and results in all kinds of conflicts.
I think what happened in New York is a step in the right direction. But
it is.
We have
people were together. People were together of all races. And even if you want to say this, the rioting in Los Angeles is multi-ethnic rioting, at least. It's not just black people rioting. I saw white people, Hispanic, Oriental people, all kinds of people rioting together. And while that's not exactly an ideal situation to riot side by side, it does tell you at least that this isn't a hopeless situation where it's just black versus white. It's not something simple like that.
Speaking of Oriental, in a lot of the areas that were affected by the riots, several Korean businesses were looted and very heavily attacked.
The Koreatown in Los Angeles, very heavily.
Now, again, we're talking about prejudice coming from every direction. And the Korean businesses, of course, as you remember, the boycotts occurring in Brooklyn. Well, it happened in L.A. too.
Mm-hmm. Yes, there's definitely a cultural disparity with Korean businesses and black-owned businesses and other businesses in various cities. And sometimes that does erupt. We have Dred Scott on the telephone with us from New York. Dred, can you hear us?
Yes, I can.
Okay. Would you like to describe your participation in this?
Well, basically, I think, I was actually out in the streets yesterday, but, marching with the students both in terms of, denouncing what went down in the verdict in L.A., but also linking it up with, May Day, which is, the international holiday of the proletariat. But I think, more than that in terms of, participation is actually, trying to actually provide some sort of understanding and guidance and leadership of what's going down now. Because, I think there's a lot of confusion out there, both about the verdict, but also people's response to it. And I think, real clearly, I think the system did deliver, a verdict that police brutality is no crime. And I think also the people delivered a verdict. And that's that it's right to rebel, It's like people went up against this system in a variety of ways, from, denouncing and standing out in front of police stations to, burning things right in front of the police stations, targeting the police, to rioting and looting. And I'd have to say that, in fact, almost the only real problem with the people's verdict is that it's not going to go far enough, and that the system's still going to be intact and brutalizing people after these rebellions.
Well, I have a question for you. It's one thing to protest directly to the police, the agency that caused it should be the ones that should be bearing the brunt of the blame, no question about it. But where does it figure in that people who really had nothing directly to do with it, like, let's say, Korean businessmen or local businessmen within the communities that were affected, they're getting their businesses wiped out, they're getting their livelihoods wiped out. How does that help the cause?
Well, I think the main thing that people have to recognize is that people are rebelling both specifically against this, the ruling and the Rodney King thing, but also, it's like people are fed up. This is a class society, this is a capitalist system, and people are beaten down and degraded. And for one brief moment, property relations in the system were, completely changed. And I think off of that, people have really faced to deal with the question of why is it that people are so angry, so pissed off at that system, people of all different races are so angry at the lives and the hell that they're put through, that the second there's an opportunity to, vent that anger and rebel and go up against the system, that they'll go up against it the most forceful way they can. And
well, the most forceful way they can.
I don't think that the solution, per se, is going up against, Korean, business owners or businesses or anything like that. But I'm not going to denounce the masses' action because they're looking for ways to fight. I think the problem is, that they actually, the people need to figure out a road forward. And I think that road forward is what people really need is revolution. They need proletarian revolution. They need communist revolution. And it needs to be led and guided by an ideology. And that ideology is Marxism, Leninism, Maoism.
Wait a minute. There is no such thing as a guiding ideology for anyone. It all comes from the individual. If you start to, say, impose one ideology, one way of thinking on a bunch of people, what you are going to get is an elite enforcing that ideology on a whole bunch of people. It's happened before. It happened in the Cultural Revolution in 1966. Your memory is very short on this. It happened in the Bolshevik Revolution of 1917. It happened in the French Revolution of 1789.
Well, what you've got right now out in the streets of L.A., I mean, you're, first of all, I disagree with your summations of these various revolutions. Secondly, what you've got in the streets of L.A. is actually a lot of people, you know, without a, you know, an ideology, going off against the system, and you can see where that's leading. You can see that the system, which, you know, can rule, that after, you know, 12 cops beat almost to death a black person in the streets, they can actually come up with a ruling that that's justifiable and that happens every day. And those people are rebelling. They're rebelling spontaneously, but that's not going to get the system off our backs. Neither is voting going to get the system off our backs. The problem is this capitalist system.
No, you you cite a problem, you propose a solution. You accept several different solutions. You try to implement as many as you can. You don't try this, whether you like it or not. At least there's one thing about this quote-unquote system that is very good, is that it allows change. It can change. It can be changed without destroying everything. It's not necessary to destroy to change it. Well, it's flexible enough so it can be changed. That's what a lot of people don't realize this.
Seattle don't necessarily agree with that. You know, they've lived this system every day of their lives.
There are about 450 million people in the former Soviet Union, Eastern Europe, who went through what you proposed and say, that does not work. It's inflexible. It does not accept change. It can't change with the times. Look what these governments did to the environment in these countries. Look at the Aral Sea. Look at East Germany. Look at Czechoslovakia. Okay? They, with no competition, they destroyed their own land. And look at Chernobyl, for crying out loud. That was not just a failure of technicians, a failure of design or anything like that. That was the failure of a system.
Okay, first off, I mean, the Soviet Union hasn't been socialist since 1956. Okay, and I think that's important to understand.
Oh, you mean it was better before 1956 when hundreds of thousands of people were murdered
Hang on. I got to break in here. This is getting way too out of hand because we're talking about Los Angeles here, and we're not talking about the whole failure of the Soviet system or anything like that.
You got me going. I'm sorry.
All right,
let's
catch your breath, and let's allow our guest to just finish up his summation because we do have a lot of phone calls we want to take, continue.
Yeah, no, I mean, my summation is that basically, look, here's a situation where the masses of people, after seeing what happened to Rodney King, after, you know, recognizing, you know, people are pissed off. They've seen that. In Los Angeles in particular, there was this one woman who was shot, you know, in the back of the head by a Korean store owner, right in similar neighborhood and stuff like that. People are pissed off about that. Many people are still outraged about what went down in the Persian Gulf. People hate this system. Many, many millions and millions of people hate this system. And they're moved, you know, by consciousness, actual consciousness, against it. And we can actually see that in how some of them rebelled.
To what degree would you say that a lot of these people that are rioting are just simply joining a crowd and just, you know, having a bit of fun themselves?
Well, I mean, I would say, okay, yeah, that's part of it. But, you know, in the main, I don't think that's actually what's guiding it. And even if that is, you know, it's like, these people have, you know, this whole system staring them in the face every day. You know, all the kids out there that are actually rioting, I think, know what it is to be brutalized by the police, okay? I think they know what it is to see, you know, these VCRs staring you in the face while you're working for $225, $325, $385 an hour in some, you know, McDonald's or something worse than that. And then, you know, you get caught up in a lot of the other, you know, stuff that the system throws down on you. And it's like, when one time, when people say, enough, we're not going to take it anymore, it's going to explode in a variety of ways. And, I mean, I don't think that you would get such an explosive situation if it were just, you know, people, like, looking for a chance to steal. I mean, you know, it's like, I think it's a lot more fundamental. It, you know, goes to the heart of what the system is and puts through.
One thing I will agree with you on, we both agree on one thing. The people in general, I'm talking about you and me, everybody, they're not really educated, and you can blame whoever you want on this. They don't know what they can do. They're always told what they should do. They don't know how much power they have to change things and make things their way. They feel that they're being controlled by their environment when, in fact, that they can actually start from the beginning and make some changes. and they are not often educated that way.
And well,
you're right.
I
do agree with you on that.
People,
but our ways of going about it are completely different.
Well, no, but I mean, the thing is, I think they are actually educated very fundamentally in what the system is and the fact that they can't change it. And,
that's
you know,
wrong.
I mean, I think if people really genuinely thought that by, you know, some sort of demonstration or by some sort of, you know, voting that it would change, first of all, that it would have happened by now, but secondly, that you wouldn't see all these rebellions. But when you could see such a stark contrast, I mean, you saw the tape, I saw the tape, everybody around the world saw this tape over and over again. And, you know, a system that can deliver that in this day and age, I mean, it doesn't deserve to live another day. And I think that people know that when that system can throw down, you know, such a ruling like that, that it's not going to be possible to change it. And in fact, I mean, I think all of history of this country really shows that the fundamental relations in this society, fundamental class relations and social relations haven't changed. This is a society where, you know, black people and women and now Latinos and others have always been on the bottom, and it's been a small clique, a small group of people, you know, white property owners who actually control and monopolize the means of production and everything else in this society, you know, that actually run and make decisions, and it hasn't been any different from day one.
All right, Dred Scott, we are very pressed for time. I want to ask you just a couple more things. First of all, your predictions for where this is going to go in the months to come, and to close out, how people can get a hold of your organization and get more information from you.
Well, I mean, I would say that, you know, in the months to come, I think right now this is going to go in ebbs and flows, but it'll eventually, quote-unquote, die out. But I think this system is going to continually compel people to react and rebel. And you know, I don't have a crystal ball. I can't say that, oh, you know, on this date something major is going to happen. I can't tell you that. But I know that as long as this system's around, it's going to force people to rebel. And I think that, you know, hopefully, you know, that the work of revolutionary, the work of the Revolutionary Communist Party and others can actually lead these rebellions into actual revolution. And for those who are down with that and really think that that's necessary, in New York they can contact the Revolutionary Communist Party at Revolution Books, which is, their phone number is 212-691-3345, and that's at 13 East 16th Street. And the area, the zip code is 10003, and again, the phone number is 691-3345. And, you know, I mean, I just have to say to people, you know, cast away illusions and prepare for revolution. Revolution's the hope of the hopeless.
All right, I want to thank you for your time, and stay active.
Okay, thanks.
Okay. It's 10 minutes to 1 o'clock. Sorry, Matt.
Just when you start the revolution, don't get yourself killed.
Well, yeah, you know, a lot of people wind up doing that anyway.
Well,
but
solving police brutality with mass murder is just not my idea of a good time.
It is a controversial thing, I'll say that.
And I guess I did something that I had promised people on previous shows I would not do, is express my political views, simply because they become a topic in and of themselves. And I guess you guys know now that I have very little patience for communists.
Well, I have very little patience for lots of different people, but communists, there's certainly some communists in there, I would guess. In any event, we have some more people to talk to. We want to take some calls, and I guess there have been people waiting for a good long time now, and we should probably get to some of them before they do God knows what. 632-6901 is our telephone number. That's the only line we're accepting calls on tonight, folks. So if you're calling any other numbers, you're just going to be wasting your time, because it won't ever be answered, at least not by us. 632-6901, area code 516. And what we're asking basically is what people's reactions to the events of Los Angeles, to the trial, to what will happen in the future, that kind of thing. And try to stay on the topic tonight, folks, because it's a pretty big topic. It's a pretty major concern, obviously. This is something that's affecting the whole country for a change.
Mm-hmm. One thing I do have to reflect on is that this is nothing new. Okay, those of you I know, a great many of you are at an age such that they do not remember a lot of the things that went on in the late 1960s. In particular, the riots in the Watts area of Los Angeles in 1965, they were sparked by an altercation between white police, black people, over a drunk driving arrest, and then just built up over that. Now, there were some accusations of brutality, not as anywhere near as clear-cut as this.
That was before camcorders were around.
Yeah. Yeah, not anywhere near as clear-cut as this. And also, witnesses, hundreds of witnesses actually seeing it with varying stories. So I'm reading this book. It's written by Cohen and Murphy. Let me give you their first names also. Jerry Cohen and William Murphy, called Burn Baby Burn. It came out in 1966. This is an old book. They still refer to blacks as Negroes in this thing. But it is a very interesting story about what happened. There's actually a little passage. I know I want to get to the callers, but this was from an FBI publication in 1965, which I find rather interesting. Let me get to it very quickly. Okay. Whenever a civil disturbance or riot occurs, there are always certain factors or developments which have prepared the way. Some kind of provocation, precipitating incident, even though it might have been completely imaginary, becomes exaggerated through rumor and magnified out of proportion to its actual importance. Mm-hmm. This case, it was very important, and everybody saw it. But if you notice, the rumors in the city almost started a riot in and of themselves.
And certainly started a panic.
Full-scale rioting begins when one or two of these isolated clashes take hold and instigate mob action. Okay, it happened in Miami over the shooting of a teenager by a policeman. Okay, this happened over a drunk driving arrest and the controversy of how the people were handled. Frustrated minority may resort to aggression just as a frustrated majority group may, so it can go the other way. When the tension is built up, the frustration has existed long enough. When rumor has done its work, the conditions are ripe. When irritations on both sides have become common, when potential opponents are in close proximity, when there is enough bad feeling, ingredients are available. Every little clash must be regarded as a spark that can start the conflagration. That was published in February of 1965, 27 years ago. What have we learned?
This is interesting. This just came in a little while ago. They are assigning Peter Uberoff to oversee the rebuilding efforts in areas of Los Angeles.
Hey, he did a great job preparing for the Olympics.
That is interesting that they've already selected somebody. In riot-torn cities before, I didn't recall them ever coming up with a position of somebody that's going to oversee the rebuilding, but this is a unique way of dealing with it, rebuilding a riot-torn city in the 1990s. The former Olympic Committee chairman and one-time baseball commissioner says the restoration will have to be a cooperative effort involving local, national, and international cooperation. President Bush's disaster declaration will help Los Angeles's hardest-hit neighborhoods get back on their feet after damage has been put at more than $500 million. Volunteers were on the streets of South Central L.A. today with mops and brooms, and as one prominent local minister put it, we go from the mess-up to the mop-up to the make-up. And damage in L.A.'s Koreatown alone has been estimated at more than $200 million. In response to the trouble, Korean Americans held a massive rally today expressing grief over the loss of businesses and futures, and to call for better relations between the city's diverse ethnic groups.
40% of the damage was in Koreatown alone?
$200 million.
Yeah, out of $500 million, it's 40%.
One Korean American described the U.S. as a patchwork of many people and said we need to keep it together. Mayor Tom Bradley says a nighttime curfew will remain through the weekend, and thousands of local, state, and federal law enforcers remain on the streets to guard against a recurrence of violence and vandalism. One elderly woman was shot by a sniper today as she walked down a South Central L.A. street. It's not clear whether the shooting was connected to the rioting or whether it was just typical L.A. life. 12:56, 4 minutes to 1 o'clock. You're listening to WUSB Stony Brook. The program is Brain Damage. Let's take some calls, all right? Good evening. You're on the air. Hello? Good evening. You're on the air. Good evening. You're on the air.
Yeah, this is Mr. Quayle. I think the jury in the Rodney King case made an excellent decision. And I don't see why you can't understand that.
Why don't we give you a shot at explaining it?
Okay. Before this, as you say, Mr. King was driving at rates of about 100 miles per hour.
The car can't do 100 miles an hour.
All right, let him talk.
And he was also the police officers thought that he was on PCP, which is a drug that gives you superhuman strength. And he was also a little bit drunk. And also, he was not getting in the arrest formation while the police officers were
Let me ask you a question. When you're being beaten up by cops and you're on the ground, what is the correct position to assume? Just so that people know this in the future.
Hands behind your back. He was trying to get up and fight him.
Wrong.
Well, did you see the videotape?
Yes.
And that's your impression of it?
Yes.
That he was trying to get up and fight? I mean, I just don't understand how anybody could see that videotape and think that.
Do you have family in Ventura County?
No.
Oh, just wondering.
And he wasn't in getting an arrest formation, and the police officers had to hit him in order to get him to stop. And after 56 blows, he finally gave up, and the police officers arrested him.
It's a miracle he wasn't killed.
I guess that's your definition of losing consciousness or something, giving up. I don't see how you can come to those conclusions based on the videotape. Are you basing it on more than just the videotape, or the videotape alone?
More than the videotape, the stuff that you didn't see.
Okay, well, did you see the stuff I didn't see?
Yeah, but you didn't see that they tried to use a stun gun on him twice, and it had absolutely no effect.
Well, first of all, how do you know this?
Because it was in the papers.
But how do you know it's true?
Was it on the videotape?
Police report.
Okay. Well,
yeah, right. Like, they're going
to
tell the truth.
I don't think I have to.
With their butts on the line, they're going to say anything, really.
What's interesting here is not only did you have the videotape, but you had a policeman testifying against other policemen. That never happens. And when it does happen, you should take note. That must mean something, don't you think?
Well, I think it's pretty stupid that they're going to have another trial for the other guy who had a mistrial on his...
What do you expect them to do?
It's usually what happens after a mistrial.
That's how it works.
That's pretty stupid. He's innocent.
They got to prove it. Well, they got to prove one way or the other.
I don't understand.
I don't know how you know he's innocent. Do you have inside information on this?
Given the American justice system, and justice prevailed, and they were innocent. And about these stupid black people.
All right, I'm going to let you off there because I don't want you to dig yourself any deeper than you already have. Good evening.
Yeah, hello?
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, yeah, well, before I start, I got to say something. Jason, don't call me. He knows what that means. One thing about the stun gun. It wasn't only in the police report. It was also a hospital report because they could see the burn marks on his body, so they did use a stun gun.
Okay.
Second of all, if it was so racial, how come they didn't beat the hell out of the other two black guys who were just sitting in the car? When they said get in the position, those two got in the position, they went in the car. Rodney King decided not to, so they had to beat the crap out of him. I personally, I don't agree they should have beat him 56 times, but enough to get him into their position and get him into the car.
Do you agree with the verdict?
Yeah, well, not really. Well, I think that...
Do you think that's proper behavior for a police officer? For a group of police officers?
To a point. There was one police officer in particular that beat him more than the others. And you look at the videotape, you could see it. And no, they didn't show you. He did get out of the car, and he wouldn't go into the position. The other two did. If he would have went into the position right away... They wouldn't have had to beat him.
He was lying on the ground. They were beating him up. He was lying. He was not even standing up. And the other police officers were standing around in a circle watching. If he was a threat, why weren't they helping?
Well, they started beating him when he was standing up. Then he fell down.
And they continued beating him for more than a minute.
Well, they had to. I think we should do that to the people that are rioting now. I think that if beating the crap out of someone, a cop shouldn't just come with his nightstick and make you leave. He should shoot you.
Sir, what you're doing is you're arguing for more rioting because those people out there want to do the same thing to the cops that do it to them, and they want to keep going, too.
And you know what? They have better guns.
...6901 is our telephone number. Good evening, you're on the air.
How can you justify Rodney King and everything he's done and his blatant disregard for the law and other human life?
Other human life? Where does that come from?
Going 100 miles an hour away from
the car can't do 100.
It's blatant disregard for other human life. What was it of your daughter who was ran over by him? What would you say then?
Regardless, sir, the American criminal system provides that whoever is being arrested has some rights, and you don't do that to people that are being arrested.
Why are
you take them into custody.
The policemen instead of the victims.
I think they had the situation well under control. What they did was they had some fun. Did you happen to see the transcripts of their computer messages that were sent back and forth? They engage in all kinds of racial slurs on a daily basis, and these things were printed in the New York Times. I mean, it's a very derogatory way to treat people, whether they're suspects or not.
I haven't answered my question.
What's your question?
Why are you defending Rodney King?
Because a suspect is innocent until proven guilty, for one thing. Policemen are supposed to be able to handle a rough situation without resorting to this kind of lunacy, and there's no other word for it.
Lunacy? What, have you ever been to South Central Los Angeles?
Yes, I have. I've been in Compton, in fact.
And you don't think that's bad enough over there without the cops?
It's a bad situation all around, but I don't see how that justifies...
The guy out of a truck and beating him and throwing bottles on his head and stones on his head is dead?
That made me sick, of course, and it's like a replay of what happened here. But what does that have to do with... I mean, it's a bad situation, but it does not justify anything.
You don't think things have gotten bad enough that you don't think it's called for?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. No way. Not even close.
What if it's you?
Oh, hey, if I was in a car chase with cops, I'd hope they beat the crap out of me.
Okay, well, let's just make sure you remember that. Oh, man, we're getting a real cross-section of Long Islanders tonight, aren't we? 632-6901, area code 516.
Yeah, I hope there's some Suffolk County cops listening. You remember that voice?
I think it's the ones that have speed dial or something like that, and I guess certain types of people just subscribe to that service,
yeah.
And they get through faster. But please, if you're out there, give us a call, 516-632-6901. Do we have more guests coming in or something? Or
Let's see. We are supposed to have somebody from the Paul Tsongas campaign calling at about 1 o'clock. I have not seen the line they're supposed to use light
actually,
up yet.
They're all lighting up now, unfortunately.
Even the...
Yes, even that one. So maybe you want to check that out.
Check it out.
Well, yeah. Maybe you should just monitor that line.
In the meantime,
get rid of all the people
only use 632-6901 until we say otherwise.
Yeah, yeah.
It means anybody who is on 6500 and is not supposed to be, get off.
Well, now you just gave out the line, so that's not really the best thing to do is give out the line that people aren't supposed to call on. But anyway, 632-6901, area code 516. Good evening.
Good morning, Eric. How
are
you doing?
Hi. I'm okay. How are you?
Good. This is Brian, and hi, Matt.
Well, Matt just stepped out, but I'm sure he...
I was wondering to arrange the Tsongas guest.
Okay.
I was wondering if I could possibly give an update on, this is off the Prodigy service, the unrest and protests that are spreading across the U.S.?
Yeah. Well, as of when?
This is as of 12 midnight.
Okay, go ahead, sure.
Okay, in Atlanta, a battle between police and students broke out at Atlanta University Center. One man injured, 9 police officers injured. Police fired tear gas into a crowd of black protesters who hurled bricks. 22 people were hospitalized.
Is this tonight or this afternoon?
This is during the day, Saturday.
Okay.
22 people hospitalized. Bookstore was looted and a police car was set ablaze at Clark Atlanta University. Blacks attacked whites at subway stations. A shopping complex was ransacked. Mobs broke windows, looted stores. Bus service was suspended. 300 arrests were made. 11 p.m. to 5 a.m. curfew. Governor Zell Miller called in the National Guard.
What city is this?
This is Atlanta, Georgia.
The National Guard has been called into Atlanta, Georgia.
Yeah.
And there's a curfew.
Yeah, and in Berkeley, California, the Berkeley City Council declared a state of emergency and imposed dusk to dawn curfew in the university town. Order came after small bands of looters attacked shops on Telegraph Avenue, the city's commercial strip near the University of California. In Birmingham, Alabama, protesters set fires, attacked news crews, and fired shots. No serious injuries reported. Brooklyn, New York. Businesses in Fulton Mall downtown closed after high school students smashed some windows during a march that drew about 400 teenagers. A street vendor was assaulted. In Buffalo, New York, up at SUNY Buffalo, there was a rally early Saturday pulling fire. All the kids in the dorms pulled the fire alarms and roughed up 2 students. Police responded with a 2-hour rally.
Police responded to a 2-hour rally. Okay.
Yeah, sorry, got the words confused. 3 black men pistol-whipped a white cab driver and burned his cab. In Chelsea, Massachusetts, half a dozen fires broke out Friday night in the heavily minority working-class city just north of Boston. Fire officials say most of the blazes were apparently set. No evidence of the fires were racially motivated. In Dallas, the retrial of a black county commissioner was rescinded after members of the jury reported death threats and the prosecutor asked for a mistrial because of the fury over the Rodney King verdict. Commissioner John Wiley Price, a controversial black activist, is being tried a second time in the state district court for a felony assault. He allegedly broke the ankle of a construction worker during a dispute on August 2nd. Judge James Walker says a juror was called by a man who said, I saw you in a courtroom today. If you find that guy guilty, you are a dead beep.
Mm-hmm.
In Iowa, police used tear gas Saturday to break up a crowd of 8,000 that turned unruly at an Iowa State University festival. Several people were severely beaten in the confrontations. Pitted blacks against whites. 20 people arrested. 30 people treated at a hospital and released. In Jersey City, 300 high school students, youths rampaged in the city after classes ended, breaking windows and looting several stores. 6 people arrested.
This is all today?
Late Friday and some today.
Okay, you should distinguish between, because you're giving the impression that there's a lot of things going on right now.
Okay, some things are going on right now.
Mm-hmm.
That's on the next page. In Las Vegas, 3 people were killed in a disturbances erupted half a mile from the city's gambling casinos. Nevada Governor Bob Miller activated the National Guard. Mayor Jan Jones clamped a curfew on the violence-torn West Side. In Madison, Wisconsin, someone shattered windshield of 34 police squad cars parked at a garage. A note on one of the cars said, "Justice for King, all pigs must die," and this was yesterday. Right here in New York, black protesters in Harlem pulled 2 white men out of a truck. This is yesterday. Stabbed one in the back, left the other with his cuts and bruises. Both were hospitalized in stable condition. Nearly 80 people were arrested. Hundreds of demonstrators ran through Manhattan after a peaceful protest in Times Square. Workers were let out early in Brooklyn. All over.
Actually, everywhere,
In Brooklyn, stores at the popular Fulton County Mall were shuttered after some 400 teenagers marched. Police said at one point they used nightsticks against the demonstrators and dragged several, including one old woman, through the street in chokeholds. About 200 protesters branched off from the main group of 1,000 and went to Madison Square Garden's Paramount. A security guard was hurt by a bottle as the group was turned away from the sports facility. This was yesterday also. Several violent acts resulting in minor injuries to 7 police officers, at least 3 civilians, and were arrested, and 61 people were injured. One officer was hit with a garbage can, and another was hit by a flying bottle. 2 cars were overturned not far from New York University. Several restaurants were stormed in Greenwich Village. Smaller numbers of protesters broke shop windows and created havoc. Hundreds more took the ranks behind in a quiet protest march. In New Rochelle, New York, this is yesterday, I believe, yeah. Rock-throwing black protesters overturned cars and broke windows Friday night in the Central Business District and the mall. Youths threw rocks and bottles at a passerby. Protesters also broke windows at City Hall. Police have reported sporadic gunfire. 8 injured people walked into police headquarters for aid. 2 police officers sustained minor injuries. And I'm trying to get to the good stuff. Okay.
Good stuff, huh?
There's more good stuff?
Yeah, there is, Matt. In Seattle, Mayor Norm Rice turned toward downtown Friday. Rioters set fires and attacked people before dawn. 140 took part in a rampage. Store windows were smashed. Few cars were overturned. Fires were set, mostly in dumpsters of a 5-block area. Looters took advantage of the chaos. 5 people were injured. A police car was burned. 50 young men who were black, Hispanic, and whites chased a white male down the street, kicking him and tripping him. Once they got him down on the ground, they were intimidating the officers. They were imitating the officers in Los Angeles, swinging their arms like nightsticks and beating them like Rodney King. A passerby, Cal Lane, says that he and his wife were driving through the area when a group of protesters attacked their car. In Springfield, Illinois, 10 people were arrested Friday night after about a crowd of 100 set fire to a grocery store, to several vacant apartments, and threw rocks and bottles in at police and firefighters. Tampa, Florida, three teenagers were arrested after shots were fired at the police. Two reported suffered minor injuries. About 200 youths threw rocks and bottles at least five houses and said at least five houses ablaze. Other incidents were reported in Normal, Illinois, Gary, Indiana, Charleston, South Carolina, Toledo, Ohio, and St. Louis.
You know it's serious when it hits Gary, Indiana.
Yeah. These are places that no one's heard of.
I've heard of them.
Yeah, I know, but I'm saying,
no one knew they had minority populations.
These are places that you never expected to happen.
That's
and
true.
There's also a story here on laws. A California law requires a 15-day waiting period for the purchase of guns. This kept hundreds of people from buying weapons during the anxious days of rioting this week.
Yeah, you know, I'd like to see how the NRA justifies this one. A lot of this rioting would not be taking place now if all these people didn't have guns. And there are runs on stores all over the place, people buying guns. You have to wonder what's on their minds, what's going to be happening in the next few days.
You've got to realize that there's some places that only have a 1 or 2 day wait on guns.
That's true.
And some not at all.
And if this was in L.A., if there was only a 1 or 2 day wait, the city would be in total anarchy.
Well, I got news for you. The city is in total anarchy. When you have dusk to dawn curfews in American cities, then something is obviously not right.
Yeah. I agree with you totally about Mayor Dinkins. He's done a great job in just controlling everyone.
It is amazing. It is absolutely amazing that nothing has... I mean, all the cities... Listen to all the cities where things are happening. San Francisco, Seattle, Los Angeles, Miami, Atlanta, Birmingham. Did you say Chicago? Anything was happening?
No, I didn't get anything from Chicago.
Okay, then Chicago... Chicago is another success story, I guess, but... most major cities are erupting in some kind of violence. In New York, very, very small amounts considering the size of the city. I mean, you have Brooklyn, Queens, the Bronx, Manhattan, all these possible tinderboxes, and it's been contained so far, and I don't think there's been any reports tonight of any damage.
One thing I have to point out, New York, Detroit, Chicago, okay? Three cities that have had recent troubles with race relations. Okay, and they've not had anything to the extent that Los Angeles has. I think we could speculate on this. I'm throwing this out for people to think about, that these problems have surfaced in the past. They've been open and they've been subject to a wide range of discussion in these three cities. Okay, Detroit has had riots like this before, back in 1968.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it's not suppressed, it's wide out in the open, and I think that's why those three cities have gotten by relatively unscathed.
I just picked this out. This is in Philadelphia. A man pointed an automatic weapon at a policeman and said, "Rodney King." As soon as he said this, he was shot in the chest by an officer.
Well, I think not so much what he said, but pointing an automatic weapon would probably have something to do with that.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
I've said Rodney King to a lot of people, and nobody has really done anything.
Yeah.
But do you know of recent history of any situation that has gone from the span from Los Angeles to Long Island?
Not in this country, no.
Because in Long Island, I go to St. Anthony's High School and in South Huntington, and some of the seniors that went out for lunch said that on Route 110, when they were driving by, uh-huh, they saw a man get pulled from his car and was beaten.
Again,
really?
That could just be an unsubstantiated rumor.
I called Newsday earlier today, and they called the Suffolk County Police and said no report had ever been brought out. Now, it's possible it just went unreported, but I doubt that. I think maybe some seniors were trying to spark a little bit of rumor mongering themselves.
But there's one confirmed one in North Amityville.
Uh-huh.
A guy pulled from his car by a black man and shot from his head. Shot in the head.
Where did you hear this?
That was on Imus, actually. Chuck reported it.
That was on what?
Imus in the Morning.
Imus in the Morning is a source for news? What about the New York Times and NBC News, that kind of thing? Have they said anything about this?
Yeah, but you got to realize, when this stuff was going on, a lot of people wouldn't... well, it is going on now, but a lot of people, when everyone was anxious in New York City, they tried to stay away from the rumors. They just tried to calm people down and make it seem like nothing was happening.
Well, at one point, nothing was happening.
Yeah, but If you turn to a station in L.A., you'll see that they probably have New York on there.
Well, I don't think anything. I think we would hear something if people were being shot in Long Island. I don't think that's the case.
That would make the front page of Newsday tomorrow if that in fact happened.
Yeah, but there was rallies today out here, but the streets in Huntington were deserted.
Mm-hmm.
Some places look like ghost towns.
Yeah, well, Greenwich Village was one of them last night. I don't know about tonight.
Well, Huntington is a potential hotbed, and any local policeman will tell you that. Anybody from Suffolk County 2nd Precinct. And what I found rather interesting, that nothing did break out. Maybe one of the reasons why is that nothing started in the city and just didn't spread. But, yeah, Huntington was a potential hotspot for violence.
Yeah.
Something that I think we should touch upon here is it's unusual that when Bush spoke on television last night, he said he was sending 5,000 federal troops to Los Angeles, 1,300 Marines setting up station near Long Beach, 2,500 Army troops and El Toro Marine Corps Air Station, and in addition to that, 6,000 National Guardsmen are in Los Angeles, plus all the police. That is one hell of a force. It's incredible. Has such a force ever been used against American people before?
I really think the president did a great job in what he said last night.
I didn't actually see the speech. I've read about it. I haven't seen the videotape yet, but I'm just looking at troops being sent into American cities. It's frightening.
Yeah, it is. It's on the show during the radiothon, you had said that the last time American troops were used was in the Spotted Owl. During the Spotted Owl, they came in to stop anything from happening in the Spotted Owl. That was on the record that you played?
Okay, yes.
And I found that was surprising, but it's turning into like a civil war. Civil meaning inside the country, war.
Mm-hmm.
And we need some sort of help.
Well, I could see where you might say that because of the number of troops that are involved. But you have to remember, those troops have not really been engaged. All they're doing, basically, is taking up space on the streets. What I've also heard, and I'm not so sure if this is rumor, that as soon as National Guardsmen went out on the streets in full battle dress, full uniform, people would start to disperse because they really did not want to go into that kind of a run-in
mm-hmm.
with troops. Bad enough that it should be with policemen, but with troops, and you're talking about a really serious business here, something on the level of Kent State.
Yeah, but all we
well
need
beyond that,
is, now is for someone to accidentally shoot someone else in New York to have total chaos like it is in L.A.
Very
possible.
A policeman
accidentally shoots anyone. It could be the guy could have murdered someone, and the policeman could shoot anyone of any color.
And the other dangerous thing are these rumors.
Yeah.
It could be totally unrelated. A regular mugging and let's say the cop chases a guy down, anything like that could spark anarchy at this point. And I read earlier from that book exactly how it could happen. Just one little spark could set the whole thing going. So everybody has to be careful on both sides. And I do have to say that the New York Police Department has done a fairly good job of keeping things under control.
Yeah, my mom was at a client in the city Friday, and excuse me, she said that they came from a client. They were going to Penn Station, and they passed Times Square, and they said the numbers of police were unbelievable. It was just so controlled; it wasn't funny. And that the only thing was at Penn Station, everyone was scared that something was going to happen there. The cab driver wouldn't even drive them all the way up to Penn Station because they were afraid of violence.
Yeah, there was quite a bit of panic and quite a bit of concern, a lot of it justified. Fortunately, so far things have been okay. Listen, we want to move on to some more phone calls.
Okay, thanks for the time.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Very helpful and informative there. I also want to update people on a couple of things. According to the Times, Local and long-distance telephone service for the 7 million customers in the Los Angeles area returned to normal yesterday after a surge of calling was touched off by the acquittal of four police officers accused of beating a black motorist. As news of the verdict was spread by television, radio, and newspapers, millions of calls from concerned friends, relatives, and business people were attempted on Wednesday and Thursday. There was, according to Pacific Bell and GTE California, both of which serve Southern California, the exact number of attempted phone calls was not immediately available yesterday. Whether calling across the street or across the country, the number of callers getting a dial tone and getting through dropped to 50%. That's usually 99% of the people get through on the first try, but only 50% were getting through. And Pacific Bell and GTE California asked AT&T, MCI, and Sprint to cut the calls coming into Southern California in half. That was to ease congestion so that access for essential traffic like 911 could be preserved. And millions of callers got an all-circuits busy message as a result. So, again, we're just that much closer to all the anarchy of civil strife breaking out. Only half the people were suddenly able to even get a dial tone. We were talking to John Rosenfelder before, who was waiting up to 2 minutes to get a dial tone at times. And it's incredible how quickly something like that can come about. Okay, let's take a couple more phone calls. 632-6901. Good evening.
I don't understand how one man who's resisting arrest is strong enough to have four cops beat up on him 56 times in 80 seconds.
Neither can we.
It's asinine, and I don't understand how these jurors could totally let him go free. And like Soma County, where they had the trial, it's all, you know, all the jurors are white except one Asian and one Hispanic, and they're all, you know, relatives of cops or firemen. It's screwed up that they could just let this go on.
Well, you know, I think it's all in perception. They look at Rodney King, they see a large black man, and they see a threat. And that's how they judge things. They think this person is the threat, and they don't even conceive of police officers as being a threat. Now, whereas you take someone who has grown up in an inner city, and they see a white policeman, even though he might be the nicest person in the world, he will perceive that as a threat. Now, you take a jury of 12 people that do not perceive police officers to be a threat in their wildest imaginations, and who all perceive a large black man to be a threat, and you'll have verdicts like this. That's why the jury was an incredibly unfair jury to get. It was not a representative jury of the community.
Even so, I think the proof was so obvious with the videotape. You know, you can't get any more proof than that. It was right on the videotape. I don't understand how they could even just let them walk free.
And this is not the first time things like this have happened. They've happened throughout the 60s, 70s, 80s. There have been miscarriages of justice like this in Miami Beach, cops being acquitted for killing people. And this didn't even involve a death. The only difference here was that we saw it ourselves. It was on videotape, and apparently that's not good enough.
But you would have think we'd be further than that in the time that we're living. But it just shows you how we haven't really changed that much.
So,
and I think the riots are good, that people are standing up. I don't think the violence is really going to prove anything. I think it's just hurting themselves. The people, like everybody in Los Angeles that's looting stores and killing people, I think it's just hurting themselves because people are looking at them and they're just saying, oh, they think they are animals now, you know?
Yeah, the violence is something that I think is you cannot answer for.
Yeah.
Destruction, on the other hand, while you can't condone something like that, you can understand it. Because when something this crazy happens, you just want to, you got to do something. You've got to vent your anger in some way. Now, the only thing is, you got to make sure that people don't get hurt when you do vent your anger.
Yeah.
And if that involves destroying some property, maybe that's the best way to go as far as that particular outlet, if there is no other outlet for you to go. But the violence is something that has got to stop. I mean, 44 people, I think that's the worst in any riot in this country, at least in this century.
And I could see how, you know, if they started, you know, maybe talking to somebody that, you know, getting somewhere with something else, I could see how they would think violence was the only thing left, but I don't understand it. I think that, you know, just like in New York City with the protests, there wasn't that much violence. I think that really proved the point much better. I think that was amazing. I thought there would have been a lot more violence.
Mm-hmm. Well, you see, it's not a black-white issue.
Oh, definitely not.
And that's what's got to be brought out here. It's not us versus them in any kind of way. This is justice versus injustice. And I don't think you could get a clearer example of how an injustice was perpetrated here, except for a couple of people that might think that it's pretty clear-cut. And the reaction by other communities, including the white community, is very important here.
Oh, definitely.
It's got to be strong. It's got to be... a solidarity of sorts.
Yeah, and what that kid was saying before, how he was driving 100 miles an hour, he would want to get beaten. That's stupid. You don't deserve to get beaten for speeding, you know? You get a ticket and you pay a fine.
Mm-hmm.
You don't. You're not asking to get beaten. And
that wasn't even just a smack upside the head. That was a sustained beating. That was something... something that you would expect on the West Bank, perhaps, but not in Los Angeles.
Yeah,
even though a lot of people would
expect
it.
There was a little bit of violence in Brentwood because my mom works in a high school, and she had to stay late. The principal made a lot of the employees stay late because he was afraid that a lot of violence would break out there. And I think there were police officers there too.
Well, there was a readiness for it, but I don't think anything actually happened, did it?
I'm not sure.
Okay. Well, Long Island has been peaceful. Hopefully, we'll continue to be peaceful.
Yeah, I really hope so.
Okay, listen, thanks for calling. Where are you calling from?
Miller Place. This is Amy.
Okay, Amy, thanks for calling.
You're welcome.
We have now something which might disturb some people, I suppose, but it's something that we've brought you in the past, and we feel that it's important to continue to bring you sometimes weird and divergent opinions of various... groups of people, and the white Aryan nation is certainly no example, no exception, rather, no example either. And they're busy too, again, thriving business today. But we have a backup number for them. But there's several numbers that we have for these people, and let's see exactly what they're saying about what's going on. They're both busy. Matt, can you believe this?
Actually, I have another number. I'll be back
another
in a
number?
Second. Yes,
okay.
For the Mississippi KKK. I got it right here somewhere.
Well, I don't know about this.
Okay. Let's see.
This is for educational purposes only, folks.
I do believe it's the 601 number. 601 number, I think, is...
Okay.
Try that one.
All right, I'll give that a try. Hopefully...
If you guys have the numbers, and I think I gave them over the air a few months ago, don't call them now so we can get through.
Yeah, so everybody can share in the racism. Oh, boy. Well, they're doing booming business, aren't they?
Yeah, this is pretty wild.
Well, we'll try a little later.
We got through earlier. I don't know what the problem is. They're on... Maybe they're on to us or something. I left them some
Maybe they're calling us. Maybe that's some of the calls we've been getting.
Yes. I know I left them some nice little messages in the past. Now, I think my latest idea was to dress all the Los Angeles riders in blue and cut a white swath across Mississippi. But...
Well, I'm going to give this one more try and we'll go back
really
to the phones.
That would really scare them.
Okay, it's still busy. So we might try that a little later. If we don't try it, that's just the way it goes, I guess. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hey, Eric. What's up? This is Tom.
Hi, Tom.
Yeah, I don't... You know, as the verdict, there's, like, so many, like, you know, varying opinions, but, I mean, you know, I don't know if you can, like, you know, ever be sure on it, you know? But,
mm-hmm.
I just feel like the rioting, I don't think there's any justification for the rioting. I don't think it's, like, a venting of the people's anger. This is, the straw that broke the camel's back. I think that's a lot of, you know, horse dump.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it is. I mean, anyone who riots, what they do is they let the animal inside them get out,
mm-hmm.
and control it. And what they use this as an excuse. I mean, this is no reason to riot. They're not rioting for justice. That's baloney. They're rioting because they're acting like animals.
Well, why are they acting like animals?
Because it's inside them. Because they can't control it. It has nothing to do one court case or things that have been building up over the year. I mean, you know.
Inside them or inside you and me or every human being on this earth?
It's inside every human being, but they can't control it.
Well, I got a good one for you.
Wait, I'm trying to understand where you're coming from. Now, are you saying we all cannot control this or only certain kinds of people can't control this? And
I'm not saying that has to do with race or anything. I'm just saying some people can control it, some people can't.
Well,
I mean, robbing
a
hi-fi store has nothing to do with, like, social justice or anything that they're claiming that they're, like, looking for.
Well, no, but and shooting people in a foreign country has nothing to do with preserving democracy either, but somehow it's linked, you know? It's one of those things where violence sometimes is used as a way of either proving a point or getting what you want. In either case, I think it's reprehensible. But while we can't excuse it, we can understand why it's happening.
I have a good one for you. Bill Cosby on NBC said this. Now, you can debate on whether or not it's a valid point or not. I'm just going to try to paraphrase what he said. Walking down Fifth Avenue during the middle of the day in Manhattan, you're surrounded mostly by middle-class people working in middle-class jobs and some sort of thing. Somebody throws a brick through a Cartier shop, okay? It's a pretty safe bet that one of those middle-class people are probably going to get a glass cut on their hand reaching for a piece of jewelry. Basically, the mentality of the average looter isn't necessarily protest for a political reason or anything like that. It's seizing an opportunity. Somebody throws a brick through the window and everybody goes through. If so, nobody throws a brick through the window, maybe nobody goes through.
Exactly. Everyone's, you know, saying, like, all these riots have, like, you know, political, you know, implications, and, you know, I totally disagree with
that.
Well,
now, put it this way. If people were living in relative comfort and prosperity and not having to worry about all kinds of things being cut from social programs, maybe there wouldn't be such an overwhelming desire to destroy their own shops and get these material goods, which they're being denied so much. You know, maybe it wouldn't happen so easily. You know, all it takes is a bad jury decision, and you have cities all over the country erupting into turmoil. There's something obviously wrong with society if it happens that easily.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, look at L.A. They pretty much riot every time something goes wrong, you know? I mean,
no, that's not true.
Not really. About every 27 years.
Well, they riot in Watts. What was that, 65?
That was quite a while ago.
Yeah, I mean, I was only a month old when it happened, dude.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, those people are collecting Social Security now, probably the people that rioted then.
Well, you know, what they're going to do is, I mean, they burned down their own homes and they burned down the shops where they work in. I mean, so what are they going to do now? Where are they going to live? How are they going to get money?
Well, all that proves is that rioting does not take much planning. You know, you obviously hurt yourself more than anybody else.
Who's going to pay for their mistake and their bad judgment?
Well, the same people that pay for everybody's mistakes, I guess, all of us.
I think that's wrong.
Well, what are you suggesting, that we just fence them off and let them live in squalor from now on as punishment?
They take responsibility for their actions. Yeah, you burn down your neighborhood, then I guess you're not going to be living in a home for a while. I mean, I didn't burn down your neighborhood. I didn't force you to burn down your neighborhood.
Well, I don't think very many people went and torched their own homes. I don't think that happened, and I think it's relatively few people that lit fires. It's something that affected. I mean, most of the dead people are black people. Most of the people that are out of work now are black people.
That's
and people
the
who live
irony
there.
About it.
That's the irony.
And well, as far as the crime and everything like that is concerned, the if you ever saw the movie Boys in the Hood, the opening credits say the majority, vast majority of the murders that occur in Los Angeles are black on black, and basically, black people are complaining. Black leaders are complaining that, you know, you're in the act of protesting your situation. You're on a path of self-destruction, and the rioting, I guess, is one of the things that they want to stop.
You see, in the community, it's looked upon that the police officers have abused them for long enough, and that's the community that must be punished in some way because of you know the horrors that they've inflicted upon them. Because this is not anything new. The only new thing about this is that we've seen it on videotape and we can see how clear a violation it is. But there's nothing new about this. Now, you take people that have lived their entire lives feeling this, that the police are out to get them and that they can get away with whatever they want, they can literally get away with murder, and you've got a very dangerous situation on your hands. And that's what we have right now. People believe that with all their heart, that the police are not out to protect them, they're out to hurt them. And that's something that we're seeing the results of now.
Or basically out to protect themselves, and that's it. Well, I guess in a very rough neighborhood, they are very conscious about protecting themselves, but I think that's where I think it got out of hand. The paranoia surrounding that was what was channel towards Rodney King.
See, I think everybody, if they're being attacked, if they're being put down, at some point you got to strike back. You have to.
But
to survive.
But they're not even making any statement. I mean, all they're doing is they're rioting and looting.
Okay.
They're not making any. If they wanted to make a real statement, yeah, they'd have a nice peaceful protest.
Well,
you know?
A lot of these riots started off
as time. It doesn't work.
And a lot of these riots did start off as peaceful protests, and then a few people started doing violent things, and it just got out of hand. Yes, peaceful protests, though, is something that they certainly have not given up on, I don't think.
Well, I think a peaceful protest shows that you're in control. A riot shows that you're an animal. You know, you're just running through the streets, you know.
As does what the police did to Rodney King.
Well, yes.
They're animals as well.
I'm not justifying their actions, but I just think the riot is such a gross overreaction to it, you know.
Right, and as the beating by the police led to worse things, the rioting is going to lead to worse things as well. I agree.
No. What is this socialist who calls up saying it's time for a revolution? I mean, okay, maybe for a revolution, but I mean, a socialist one? I mean, I don't think we want to regress into a socialist society.
Well, to be honest, I don't think there's much chance of that happening, at least not in the near future. But here on USB, we present all kinds of diverse opinions.
Yeah, but it's just, interesting that the people are frustrated, so what they're going to do is, hurt themselves by making this a socialist society. I mean, that's... that's like such a loaded statement against
itself.
Exactly
what I said. It's circular reasoning. It's practiced by socialists all the time.
I didn't get the whole thing. I heard it in the car, and then when I was walking into the house, I missed some of it, so I didn't get all what you said. You know.
Do I detect a bit of New England in your voice?
Just a tad.
Oh, what part of New England are you from?
I'm Boston.
Have you been in Boston lately?
Actually, I was up there yesterday.
Okay. Did you hear of any violence going on up there?
Not really. They were just, they were kind of a little bit thinking that, maybe Roxbury would, but I don't think Roxbury is going to, they're not really worried about it exploding.
The busing problems have pretty much gone away up there, haven't they?
Do you remember as far back as 1975?
That's the year I was born.
Okay, so...
quite a question, then.
So your parents,
yeah, right.
Did your parents ever tell you about what happened in Boston in 1975?
I know.
Okay, the busing issue. Basically, in order to integrate schools, the Supreme Court in 1974 ruled that children could be transported from one district to another in order to balance all the schools. Basically, what you would find is if an all-black neighborhood would have an all-black school, they didn't want that. They wanted to bring some white people in there and make it racially balanced, black people to the other schools and make those racially balanced. So they started moving people around all over the place. In Boston, they protested loudly. And, of course, the battle was divided among racial lines. There was rioting. Some people did get killed. And there's actually a very famous picture of a white protester, a student about college age, actually using an American flag as a spear and pointing it at a black man who had his hands up, trying to say, "Don't hurt, don't hurt me."
Yeah.
The very famous picture.
Are you sure that wasn't staged? That's too perfect to be.
It was.
Be
it was almost too perfect.
A live picture or something. I mean,
that's amazing.
Like a pretty little caption under it. But, up in Boston, they really have, no reason to riot. The cops up there are, pretty fair about everything, but,
Yeah, but that's what it took, rioting back in 1975 to make things as good as they are now.
Yeah, they kind of got it out of the system,
Listen, sir, we're going to move on.
All right, no problem. Take it easy, and
good
night.
Thanks for calling. 632-6901 is our phone number. Shall we, give the folks over at, White Aryan Nations, one more chance to pick up the phone? I guess if I dial the right number, we'll have a better chance of that. That must be rough when you're one digit away from the White Aryan Nations. Imagine the wrong numbers you get. Now, they're still pretty busy over there. We'll try them again a little later. Let's get a real person on the phone. Good evening.
Yeah, hi. First of all, I'd just like to say, first and foremost, I just want to put my two cents in.
Okay, speak up. You got a bad line.
Okay, the verdict was appalling, bottom line. However, you have to look at the whole point. People have been mentioning the rioting, and as far as that, I don't think the riding is directly based on the verdict as much as people think that it is, as much as it is on the economic situation in South Central Los Angeles and other parts of Los Angeles.
Got a question for you. Okay, the verdict comes down at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. All of a sudden, the protests start. Don't you think it's a kind of a result of the rioting? There was no no protest going on before the verdict was handed down?
Right, but it was also a perfect excuse for people to vent their frustration. Because, I mean, if you realize that not everyone, you know, who was protesting or who was rioting or who was looting was that inclined to fully comprehend what happened more than they were inclined to actually loot or cause, you know, or disrupt what was going on, you know, in the community.
I have another question for you. Can you paint a mental picture of South Central Los Angeles for me? I'm just saying, like, take me through a walk.
I've actually been to South Central Los Angeles. I spent a semester in Watts, and I spent a part of that semester in Englewood and also in downtown Los Angeles.
Okay.
As far, I mean, it's one of the most, I've been through Compton, I've been through South Central. It's one of the most depressed areas that I've ever witnessed, and I've been to the Midwest through this recession. I've been to the Pacific Northwest. I've been to the South, the Deep South. It's one of the most depressed areas I've ever encountered in my entire life.
And not only that, it's a very angry area, too.
Of course. I mean,
very bitter.
But what they said also, and something that you mentioned that I hope to get to also, what you said about as far as violence is concerned, there's violence in South Central Los Angeles. You know, regardless, I read, I think it was in the Times, where it said that even if Saturday night, tonight, even if there were no riots going on, you could expect 10 to 12, you know, or 10 to 15 drive-by shootings, you know, regardless of any accelerated activity.
Mm-hmm.
South Central Los Angeles, and also if you take, you can take that section, you could take that economically depressed section out of any major urban area in the United States of America, where the, and it's sad to say, but where the white middle class has moved and retreated to the suburbs, and what you have is basically a minority faction of our society living in under very economically stressful situations. What you have is a very depressed and a very angry area, and also which turns into a very dangerous area. And that's the point I wanted to make. As far as a picture of South Central Los Angeles or you know, I mean, it's just a very depressed area.
You know, you bring up a good point here, because people say, well, how can these people destroy their own neighborhoods and things like that? Well, if you grow up in a place like that and you live there all your life and you see on TV, you watch L.A. Law and you watch commercials and see how everybody is living with their two-car garages and blenders and VCRs and things like that, and you live in this squalid neighborhood like this part of Los Angeles, and suddenly burning it down does not seem so bad. Because it sucks. It's terrible. It's the most depressing way to live that you can possibly imagine. And when you consider you're in America in the 1990s, nobody should have to live that way. So, you know, this anger certainly translates itself to destruction. And, yeah, if you sit down and think it over, maybe it's not the best thing to do, but you can certainly understand why.
Also, mentality of having nothing to lose and everything to gain.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you have nothing to lose by destroying your neighborhood. However, what you are doing may be directly or indirectly making people aware that you exist. The United States of America will never view South Central Los Angeles again in the history of this country, forever how long, you know, this country, you know, is around as we know it. I mean, and beyond that, it will never view South Central Los Angeles.
Well, I have some news for you. This has happened before. Almost the same situation to the letter in 1965.
Right.
Okay, South Central made the headlines back then, and all of a sudden people forgot about it.
However, between 1965 and today, we had the 80s, which was this decade of tremendous growth and tremendous, and then we had the late 80s and the early 90s with this incredible sense of pride and nationalism, and then falling into this recession, but people are still, you know, very, very, very secure. You know, this is the time of the white middle class, upper middle class, suburban, you know, lifestyle. I think in 1965 the climate of the country was much different, whereas that there was tension, there was racial tension building up all over the country, and also, you know, the black society and also other ethnic groups in the society were seen very differently than they are today. Because right now we're under the facade that, well, we're past the civil rights movement,
everybody is equal. Back then it was, well, you know, African Americans were still trying to gain equality. Now supposedly African Americans are equal and there is no discrimination, but we see to the contrary now that you know, this discrimination right from this verdict, which was you know, I think we kind of digressed and talked about the riots to get back to the initial point of the verdict. The verdict and the main point and the anger that I feel, and I know a lot of people feel, is number one, police brutality, and number two, racism. And this is just racism manifesting itself, and it's making people aware in 1992 that we're no different or any better off than we were in 1964 preceding the Watts riot.
Yeah, when people see that nearly 30 years has gone by and there's been no appreciable change in some ways of living, some people are still being denied opportunity and forced to live in squalor, you know, that sort of makes you lose any faith in the system and how peaceful protest and giving things time to develop will actually change things.
Mm-hmm.
You tend to lose patience and say, you know, okay, we tried this solution, now let's try something else. And you've seen it in South Africa, you've seen it with Palestinians, we've seen it with the Irish, you've seen it with all kinds of people that claim to have tried it the peaceful way, not been listened to, and have turned to violence as a last resort.
Right. Also, Quincy Wright wrote in The Negative Peace Concept about how economics in the 20th century and also beyond are going to be the main focal point of unrest and uneasiness in democratic societies. Also, to digress again to another point, police brutality. I myself have been a victim of police brutality. I'm a student of civil rights law at Antioch University in Ohio. I'm on internship now in New York City, and I've encountered through my travels to the West Coast, to the South, working with different organizations, a tremendous amount of not only police brutality but actual police harassment. However, I do know police officers in the New York area and also in Ohio, in Los Angeles, and in Mississippi that are the most wonderful people I've ever met. I don't think necessarily police are bad. I think that there are a lot of things that are wrong with the structure in our country and who we see to be above us or there's a structure that's really kind of false. Seeing it as how you know, this jury of 12 people saw these cops who were actually criminals as these figures that they couldn't convict. However, again, going back to the 14th Amendment, the Equal Protection Clause, you'll see in the upcoming months when the federal investigation unfolds that these police officers will indeed be found guilty of violating and conspiring to evade due process according to the Equal Protection Act of the 14th Amendment. And I think justice will be served. And that's another point I wanted to make, because eventually I think it's just a matter of time. And I think all this rioting and unrest, you know, in the way the media is feeding on it, will definitely be to the advantage of justice in convicting these officers.
Do you think we've seen the worst of it?
As far as the rioting is concerned?
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure we've seen the worst of it. I think that this country right now is going to go through an incredible amount of change. I think that the entire infrastructure of this country has actually been in the last couple of days has been changed. It's kind of awkward to hear people praise George Bush and the way he's handling this, or praise you know Daryl Gates and handling this situation. I think that's pretty appalling. I think that the best way to avoid the situation was not to have had the situation at all. But
well, wasn't one of the first things George Bush said that the judicial system has worked, or something crazy like that?
In this case,
he said something to the effect of, that's the system has worked. We may not agree with it, but it's, you know, we must respect it, or something bizarre like that.
Well, I could hear him saying we must respect it until we can resolve it the same way, you know, bring the federal charges on him. But I don't see where. On the other hand, how can he say otherwise? He really can't.
No, he can't. I know.
He really can't say otherwise. Not just because he's, quote-unquote, protecting the system, but because he legally can't.
true.
What do you mean he legally can't?
True, but also this
because
being
the executive really can't start attacking, even though he has on other occasions.
He's the president. He can say what he damn well pleases.
Supreme Court ruling.
David Dinkins
not
came
from
out
his office,
and the first thing condemned the verdict. I mean, I'm not saying that, you know, the mayor of New York has as high a status as the, you know, to protect national security, of course. However, I mean, I don't honestly believe that George Bush is in is against this verdict as much as he claims to be. I think he's doing what he has to do. But as far as I'm concerned, and I'm pretty, I consider myself pretty knowledgeable, as far well enough to make it to have this opinion that George Bush really doesn't care about the people.
I have a question for
Los Angeles. He doesn't really care that this verdict was a prime example of what is wrong with the judiciary system in our country, and what has been wrong for the past however years, and is going to be wrong until someone takes a stand and corrects it.
Realistically speaking, how much control does the president of the United States, any president, that means people you like, people you hate, would have control in this situation? How much control would he have over a jury of that was totally out of sync with what was going on? How much control would he have over it? He doesn't. From Washington.
Well, symbolically, also, symbolically, he is, the head of our country,
That's where that's been his failing. That's true. That's where somebody like Roosevelt succeeded, and people like Bush have failed. In that he not so much he thinks that since he can't do anything about it, he's not going to try. And Roosevelt says no, the presidency is almost the soul of the nation. And yeah, if so, the nation is crying, the president should be crying too. In a way.
Well, Jack, I mean, he's not even empathizing with the people. What he's doing is he's acting, and he's taking the role of an authority, and he's it's the whole concept of might makes right with, and it's this whole concept of all right, well we're going to stop the rioting, and as he said, God bless this beautiful country of ours.
No, he always says that.
Well, that's what he thinks a president should be doing, okay? Now, of course, there are a lot of people who don't agree, and I've used examples such as Roosevelt to emphasize that. He's doing what he thinks a president should be doing. Now, that's where you can attack him. But I don't necessarily think what he's doing right now is wrong.
Say George Bush is a great man. He's a peacemaker. He's a credit. Thank God he's in the office. And, thank God he's controlling the country in these troubled times. And the people like that, who I find frightening, they're a majority, or they're a force there that are going to actually appreciate, George Bush's response to this. However insulting I see it, and however insulting, it is to the situation.
Okay, we only have a couple of minutes, so I want to move on to a couple more calls. Hopefully we can fit them in.
Well, thank you very much.
Thanks for calling. And let's try and wrap this up. Good evening.
I'd like to say something about the being in Los Angeles.
Okay.
I think this bull crap, though, because, the way that different races are and everything, my dad is, totally prejudiced and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, this just gives him more reason to be, totally prejudiced against every other race besides that's not white,
Right.
So I think it's, total crap, they don't have to do all this violence to express their feelings,
Well, I don't think there's much planning involved. I think it's just something that's just spontaneously happening and nobody can control it. I mean, there's a lot of people. I mean, again, I want to stress that people not think that there's this monolithic mass of any particular ethnic group that's just doing everything and following orders. There's a lot of people there that think it's a very bad thing, that would agree with everything you're saying. So it's not a question of, one group of people saying this, one group of people saying something else. It's a situation that's out of control completely.
Yeah, and another thing, I'd like to say something about that guy. That guy who, took people out of high school, that guy Dredd or something, what's his name?
Dred Scott,
yeah.
I think, if that guy, doesn't like the system, then he should move out of the country.
Well, that's not... Why do you say that? I mean, you can't try to change the system? Isn't that part of the system?
Yeah, no, but if you don't like it, then you should,
If you don't like it, you should change it, don't you think?
I think I already said what I my piece on that. I agree with him in that the people should be able to change the situation if they don't find it satisfactory. What I don't think is he is trying to impose one way of thinking to do it, and that is dead wrong, and it has failed. Okay, that's where I have attacked him. But as far as changing the system, there's nothing wrong with what he's saying. That, yes, there are things that need to be changed. How he wants to do it, I think, is wrong.
Yeah, I think that the system should be changed in certain ways, but not totally the way, like, saying communist and all that.
Yeah, and he wants to impose a different system that's inflexible and doesn't allow change, which is the ironic thing about it. At least with this quote-unquote system, I never even knew what the system was, to tell you the truth. It's just some word that's being thrown around a lot.
Well, considering
it allows for change.
Considering it's taking 12 years just to elect a Democrat into the White House, I don't think there's much chance of a communist takeover very soon.
I don't think electing a Democrat is going to change anything.
Well, that's true, but you can see how hard that is. So I don't necessarily think communism is around the corner, except around a different corner going the other way. Thanks so much for calling in.
Okay, bye.
Good evening.
Yeah, I'm a Suffolk County cop. I drive car 409. Hey, I had to go break up a party at Ronkonkoma. The kids are yelling, hey, why don't you beat me like you beat Rodney? So I took the black one, I pistol whipped him, dumped him in the woods, wrote Porch Monkey on his back, white paint.
Good evening. Anybody there? Good evening.
I'd like to make one quick point. All the black people and most of the black people who are setting the fires and looting the stores, and they're beating up white people just because they were white. After the cleanup and all the fires were put out, all the white people came and cleaned up the neighborhood. I think that shows you something about the races.
Who told you this?
It's all in the news. All the white people are volunteering to clean up the neighborhoods that they don't even belong to.
There might be something wrong with your picture tube. Good evening.
How are you?
I'm pretty good. How are you?
I'm all right. A little bit disturbed about all this. How are you guys over there? What are you up to, Matt?
Oh, nothing much. What about you?
Just hanging out. I just wanted to make a few points here. Been listening all night. I think it's pretty stupid for a bunch of people to destroy their own freaking neighborhood. And I think the reason's a little bit different. You said that they figure it's not so great in the first place. I figure that they were handed it in the first place, and since it's free already, they figure they'll burn it down to just be given more.
Well, I don't know where you come up with that. I mean, how can you say what was handed to who? I'm not sure I understand what you're saying.
The neighborhood was handed to the blacks in the first place. They're all in free housing, this and that, on welfare.
No, they're not.
It's all handed to them. They don't care.
No,
they burn
not.
It down. They figure they'll be moved somewhere else, and the white man will once again appease to stick a pacifier in the mouth of the screaming black baby of America.
What is this? Everybody in Long Island, the racist. Good evening.
Yeah, how you doing?
I'm okay. I don't know about the rest of
that
them.
That guy was from Connecticut, I should tell you.
Okay, good evening.
Yeah, it was interesting to hear that last caller and to know that he's probably not alone. There's probably a lot of people who think like him.
Oh, yeah, I think I heard from all of them tonight.
Anyway, I grew up in Detroit, and I lived there in 67 during the riots. And I have four brothers who live in Los Angeles, one of them in South Central. So as you can imagine, a lot of this really hit home. Are you familiar, not to change the subject, are you familiar with Frank Zappa and the Mothers of Invention?
Oh, we are very familiar with them.
Yeah, well, moderately anyway.
Are you familiar with a song that he did about the Watts riots in 65 called Trouble Coming Every Day?
Eric?
I'm not, no.
I dug it out tonight on my album collection. If you get a chance and you find it in your studio, you ought to give it a listen. It was written 27 years ago, and it could have been written last night. It's about sitting around watching a Los Angeles riot on television, and it was a very visceral song, as Zappa often is. And it's very chilling to hear it 27 years later to realize nothing really has changed, including the attitudes of callers like the previous caller.
And this book in my hand has reflected that, too. I've been reading it. I picked it up from the library today. And it's almost a summary of what happened, just the other day. It's just a repeat and happened in many of the same areas.
Yes. A few minutes ago, one of your callers was talking about George Bush and his reaction. I'm not a big believer in Bush, but in a very cynical way, I think George Bush reacts to bloodshed. Positively, negatively, he understands it. he inflicts it, and he will understand the threat of it. And in one way, on one level, I think maybe this will get his attention to something that he and his predecessor, Reagan, ignored for 12 years. There is a lot of simmering anger, and it could strike out. And if Bush does understand bloodshed, he understands fear, and perhaps this will galvanize him to do something.
Okay.
I hope it's the right thing.
All right. Thanks for calling. We're out of time, and that's going to just about do it for Brain Damage tonight. Matt, thanks for coming in. Thanks to all the callers, and hopefully we'll have some peace and harmony coming nationwide throughout the next week or so. In any event, we'll be back again next week at midnight with another edition. Stay tuned for The Big Guy. Good evening.
Warning. The contents of...